You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, doctor, if I really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give the information, asking for love, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thick of the fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number three. This is Dave Hodges, host of the Common Sense Show, and we're the show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time, and we come to you live every Sunday evening at this time from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on the East Coast and 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. on the West Coast. And thanks to Paul Preston for that riveting interview. I described the contents of that to Doug Hagman earlier this afternoon, and I told him, I said, if it was anybody else but Paul, I wouldn't have delved into it. And I can't say if anybody else, but I'm in my little inner circle of people I trust. And wow, was that riveting. And thanks again to Doug Hagman for his appearance in the first hour and that very timely information. And no less for the controversy, we've got Mike Adams on the line. It's been a while since I've talked to Mike, probably a good month, and that's a long time for us to go without communicating or doing an interview. But he's loaded for bear. Let me just put it that way. He's ready to go, and we all know him as the Health Ranger, and he's got naturalnews.com. It's really one of my favorite websites. It's something I go to every single day to check out the latest. He's got a whole bunch of other new sites, and we're going to let him talk about that certainly as we go through. Mike also advertises great products on my website at thecommonsenseshow.com. So without any further ado, let me welcome Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, to the Common Sense Show. Mike, it's been too long. Thanks for joining us. We're glad to have you back.
It's great to be back, Dave. Thanks for having me back on. And in the last month, it's almost unbelievable how much has happened in the realm of politics, international geopolitics, the potential for war, you know, the comments by Putin recently and so on. I mean, it's like we're living in a compressed time field or something. Everything's happening so quickly now.
It really is. Is there anything to you that really kind of jumps to the head of the class of all these events we've seen in the past 3 or 4 weeks?
Absolutely.
What's that one thing that just jumps out at you?
Well, it's the revelations from the Comey hearings and the inescapable conclusion that the entire mainstream media is so committed to fake news propaganda that even when they are proven wrong by James Comey's own sworn testimony, they refuse to correct their fake news stories that are now evidently false. So the fake news is so bad that they are continuing to push this illusion, the fantasy fairy tale that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians, when the truth is that even James Comey admitted that Trump was never under investigation, yet he refused to leak that fact to the public when he was leaking everything else that was false and that was damaging to Trump. We also know that Loretta Lynch is a criminal. Now, for sure, we know that Hillary Clinton was under criminal investigation, and James Comey agreed to downplay that and call it a matter rather than an investigation. So as far as I'm concerned, Dave, we need to see indictments and prosecutions for felony crimes, serious felony crimes, of James Comey, Loretta Lynch, Hillary Clinton, and that's just the beginning of the list. And we need to drop the special prosecutor, Mueller, who's investigating Donald Trump, because the whole basis for that special prosecutor has now been revealed as a complete orchestrated hoax by James Comey.
Well, not only that, Mueller has been proven to have a long-term friendship with Comey, which makes his appointment inappropriate from the start.
Yes.
So now you know what's going to happen when Trump steps in and fires the special prosecutor Mueller. We're going to have cries of Watergate again when Archibald Cox was dismissed by Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
So we're kind of, you know, that's what we're going to hear. Let me tell you something else I'm getting, and I want to get your reaction. Doug Hagman and I briefly discussed this in the first hour. What I'm getting is the nuances, and this is a Fox News source and one other source, told me that they're getting information that some representatives of people that we might refer to as the deep state has told Trump, okay, you can go where you want. Hillary Clinton's not out of bounds. None of this is out of bounds. But you may not go down the path of child sex trafficking, or there'll be very serious consequences, meaning threats of violence to Trump and his family. Have you been getting anything on this at all?
No, that's not a realm that I spent a lot of time researching. So no. But I understand, at least from what I've seen out there, that the child sex trafficking probably has very deep ties to some very powerful people in Washington. And I wouldn't be surprised that that's off limits. But my question is, what does Trump have to give the deep state in order to prosecute Hillary Clinton? See, I think that, see, the deep state runs everything now. We know that. The NSA spied on the Supreme Court. You know, they spy on every member of Congress, everybody, all the time. They're running the show. So if Trump goes after Hillary Clinton and is able to achieve an indictment, it's only because he is allowed to do so.
I agree.
Really, if you think about it. And what does he have to give the deep state in order to be granted that allowance? Does he have to agree to, let's say, a military invasion somewhere? North Korea, perhaps? Something, maybe he has to agree to look the other way for a giant military-industrial false flag or something. I'm just throwing out, you know, I don't have any evidence of that. I'm just saying these are possibilities. I wonder what he has to give the deep state to go after Hillary Clinton.
Well, Mike, there's some circumstantial evidence that shows that you have really good instincts. We know for a fact that Trump was not in charge of foreign policy for quite some time. Excuse me. And we also know that this whole Korean thing is an orchestrated issue. It's all about the fact that North Korea is not in central banking. But Trump is actually fighting back now. He ordered the removal of two of the three carrier task forces, and he's doing something that has to make the deep state really angry. There's war games going on in the South China Sea, which will do nothing but infuriate China, and the deep state wanted China to align with America to attack Korea, North Korea. So it looks like Trump is posturing here, and there is maybe kind of a one-upsmanship going on right now where they're negotiating. But I'm seeing all the signs that Trump is starting to reassert control over foreign policy. So I think you're absolutely right. Will he allow invasion somewhere in exchange for this deal? What I see him doing is just the opposite. Mike, he sent Duterte back to the Philippines after their meeting. And what was the first thing that Duterte did? He prosecuted 3,000 online sex traffickers. And then ISIS invades the Philippines.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. I have a slightly different direction on that, which is that I think that an invasion of North Korea serves the interests of the president, as well as, of course, the military-industrial complex. I think that it sends a warning signal to China and to Russia that America is willing to get aggressive. But as you know, North Korea can launch ballistic missiles to South Korea. You know, North Korea doesn't have to hit Washington or Oregon in order to do a lot of damage to Western civilization. All they have to do is lob some really short-range missiles or even an EMP. Have you ever thought about if North Korea just launched an EMP missile straight up into the sky and detonated it, it would take out South Korea as well as North Korea, but North Korea hardly has any technology anyway, so they're so low-tech they would hardly be affected. But South Korea would be wiped out, grid-down scenario. So, you know, North Korea has a suicide option, which is to just start blasting their neighbors, which could cause all kinds of economic havoc all over the world. I mean, a lot of Americans don't realize how much is manufactured in Korea. You know, all the Samsung products, for example, washers, dryers, appliances, electronics, smartphones and so on. Korea is a major manufacturer. They have very good quality, by the way. Not like 30 years ago. I mean, they're a very quality-minded country at this point. So North Korea has that card up their sleeve. But I do think, just to summarize, I do think that Trump would politically benefit from some kind of war or attack somewhere on the planet. I'm not saying that Trump himself would attempt to make that happen, but that he might not even know what's happening behind his back, and he might be the last to know. Again, I don't have any evidence of that. I'm just analyzing what I see as possibilities.
Well, it's an interesting take, Mike, and it's one that I haven't put at the forefront, but maybe I might need to, because this makes a great deal of sense. Clearly, we agree on one thing here, though. There is a tremendous power struggle going on for the control of the presidency.
Yeah, that's right. And domestically, what I see is if the left doesn't come to their senses and stop pushing this ridiculous Russia collusion conspiracy theory, what's going to happen is they're pushing the country into a civil war. And you and I have talked about civil war risk quite a bit. It's still going in that direction. We are closer to it now than we were the last time we talked about it, for sure. Because what is a civil war? It's the ultimate expression of when two sides so wholeheartedly disagree that they cannot even be in the same room without killing each other, you know, because they have no common area to reach negotiations or even logic or reason. The leftists today, they do not operate with logic and reason, so you can't reason with them. You can't say, oh, like even Alan Dershowitz is trying to reason with leftists now. You know, Dershowitz, a left-wing law expert, and he's even trying to tell them, you people are insane, you know, CNN, you're insane.
Yes.
By all the rules of logic and reason, Trump has not committed any crime, and of course he can fire James Comey and so on and so forth. And the left can't even handle logic from their own people. They go ballistic. But it's taking us towards civil war.
It is. And you're right about the internal rift with the left. I mean, we're looking now. I don't know if you saw this or not, but we have the LGBT and the people who are for gay pride. They were protesting Sharia law, which is anti-gay. And then the LGBT as a group came out and criticized the gay pride group for being Islamophobic. I mean, did you see
right.
that? It's absolutely.
Right.
I hope I got that sequence right, but it's insane.
It's twisted, and you're right. See, this is what happens when you don't have an internal philosophy rooted in any kind of reason or fundamental rights. The left is insane, and they're turning on themselves and eating their own, so to speak. Because, you know, how can you support gay people and support Sharia law at the same time when they're throwing gay people off roof buildings and executing them for being gay? So it's just one obvious contradiction among many. Like, what about these college students at Evergreen College who claim that all white people are by definition racist and bigoted from being white, and they have a no whites demand on campus, and they berate that white liberal professor who says, I'm not leaving, I'm not a racist, I voted for Hillary Clinton. They're like, but you're white, you're evil, you have to leave campus. And they locked down the buildings and they practiced terrorist tactics and they demanded no homework and they got the exclusion. The administration of the college granted them a no homework exclusion because they made a list of demands. This is what the left has come to now. And universities are now left-wing terrorism training camps. That's what they've turned into.
Yeah, I've said the same in my podcast. Yeah, this whole thing, but it's not just the Evergreen College situation, which is so blatantly racist against whites. But listen, I have a 16-year-old honor student. I'm not bragging. What I'm saying is there is an influence now on our choice. The state universities are already writing to my son because of his GPA. He's tied for number one in his class, and they want him. And he's not going to any of their schools. Why? Because at the University of Arizona and several other post-secondary institutions, they are hiring social justice warriors to spy on fellow students who have inappropriate views and are reporting them. And I don't know what's going to happen if you have an inappropriate view, but this is craziness. My son's not going to one of those institutions. We're going to send him to a private Christian university.
They're recreating, the universities are recreating the Stasi secret police. They're recreating the Third Reich. It's incredible. They call themselves Antifa, anti-fascists, and yet they pattern themselves based on fascism. I mean, Nazi, right? The word Nazi means national socialism, right? Which is far, far left to the point of fascism, you know, where the state runs the corporations, which is exactly what Obama has created. I mean, how many corporations can now exist without a nod from the state? I mean, how often does Apple get tax exemptions for opening up in a city or offshore tax treatment, you know, special treatment from the IRS, where they're allowed to funnel billions of dollars into offshore jurisdictions and pay virtually no tax in the United States, whereas small businesses like mine, or perhaps, you know, others who are listening, if you have a company, you're not exempt from paying tax. You got to pay the full tax because you don't have all these special rights. You don't have pals in the administration. You know what I mean? So
yep.
The whole thing, it's fascism is what the left is invested in. They are intolerant. They are racist. They are bigots. They are fascist. They are dangerous. They believe in killing people whose speech they don't like. And they are pushing us toward violence. And frankly, a lot of people, a lot of conservatives who tend to be gun owners, a lot of them that I've talked to privately tell me, you know, hey, bring it on. You know, we're quite capable of defending this nation.
Well, I think there are. There are 7 million veterans of fighting age in our country. And so there's no question. We have a more powerful, potentially powerful force, much more so than the Viet Cong did in the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah.
They tied us up for almost 11 years. So there's no doubt in my mind this goes back to something else, Mike, and let me just share this with you very quickly. I don't think I've ever shared this with you. I used to be a Maricopa County first responder because my family would get the drugs first in the case of an outbreak of a pandemic or whatever. And then FEMA took the program over, and I became really good friends with this guy in our meetings from FEMA. We started to play racquetball together, hang out together. We were friends for almost 20 years. One day he shows up as I'm walking off from basketball practice to my office. He intercepts me at my office. He and his wife are there saying, we're bugging out. I go, well, define bugging out. Well, they and other FEMA and DHS people that went to early retirement built a self-sustaining community that included portable air. And mm-hmm. I said, why are you doing this? He said, because if the real people that control this government can't get the way they want, they're going to launch pandemics on this country. There's going to be biological attacks. And he said, remember, I'm a counter bioterrorism. I know what's coming. I know what we have that the average person doesn't, and it's time for me to leave. Mike, that's what I'm afraid of. That's what I'm afraid is coming.
I think you're absolutely right about the severity of what they, the deep state, are willing to do to rule over this country. And let me bring in this context. You know, when the deep state opposes President Trump and they are actively trying to destroy Trump and overthrow his administration, they are really at war with the people, because the people elected Trump legitimately through the Electoral College. You know, he won the election, right? Even when the left cheated and committed massive fraud, Trump was still able to overcome that. So the deep state is at war with we the people, which means that they've already in their minds declared war on us. That there's no barrier to them dropping a biological weapon on a city. There's no barrier to them committing acts of terrorism if it serves their interests of overthrowing Trump. You know, there's no barrier to them even organizing a nuclear or a radioactive false flag of a targeted city that, again, the aftermath would somehow hurt Trump or support the overthrow. You know, to the deep state, we the people are expendable pawns. We are inconsequential. We don't even count on their radar. I mean, they don't even need that many people to vote in any case, because they control so much of you know, everybody else. I mean, if they killed 10% of the country, it wouldn't matter to them, you know? And they have the lack of ethics and the lack of morality in order to pull that off. So whether it's biological or nuclear, or maybe they hold off for a while and see if they can overthrow Trump by impeachment, and maybe if they can't get the impeachment, then they trigger the next escalation. Who knows? Maybe, I mean, this is something that I've thought about seriously. Maybe they nuke LA and blame North Korea. Because who's going to know the truth? You know, if a major city on the West Coast goes up in a nuclear bomb, and if everybody on the media says North Korea nuked us, how are you going to know that's not true?
You won't know.
There's no way to know.
And I agree with you, but I don't think it's going to be a few million. When I reflect back on what my friend that was in FEMA said, I think really we're looking at 200 million. And here's why. We just identified it. We have 300 million handguns in this country. That is too much of an obstacle for anyone to overcome as an occupation force. So they got to wipe out the people. It's awful to say, Mike, but that's what I think is going to happen if they get their way.
If they think about this, if they did a biological weapon, however, the biggest deaths would be in the cities. They would wipe out the Democrat base. You know, it'd be 80% of the deaths would be Democrats probably, because the rural people would survive better. You know, less population density, more sunlight, and so on and so forth. Less chance for the virus to spread. So do you think
I agree with you. I agree with you. But they don't give a damn about the Democrats. They're simply an instrument on their road to total control.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
They don't care who they kill. These people are completely devoid of conscience or loyalty or anything else, and it's amazing to me how far we let this go. When do you think, and this is something that I'm going to start asking people that I think might have a suspicion on, when do you think the deep state really gained as much control as they have? Was it after World War II? Was it the assassination of Kennedy?
No.
What do you think?
I think it was 9/11, frankly. I think it was the signing of the Patriot Act was absolutely crucial to the quasi-legalization of mass domestic surveillance. And if you look at also the economic difficulty of mass storage, before 2001, it was not economically feasible to store every audio of every phone call, but rather only selected calls or metadata. But now, you know, after 2001, it became economically feasible for the NSA to build massive data centers and literally record every audio, you know, every video, every web address, every bit of data moving in and out of your phone or your computer, and then to archive that so that that can be mined later. And it can be mined for metadata, it can be transcripted, the audio can be transcripted into text files that are then keyword indexed for keyword searching. I found something really shocking, surprising recently. All my videos on YouTube, which is owned by Google, have been automatically transcribed using Google's voice recognition AI system. So there's you know, closed captioning. Well, I didn't put it there. They built it automatically, and it is ridiculously accurate. It is so good. It's better than 99% accurate, and you know they're doing the same thing to every phone call. So what they're able to build is a free text, what we call a free text search system on a massive scale of every phone call, every conversation of every Supreme Court judge, every senator, every individual, everybody, all over the country, and then to cross-match all of that with your web searches through Google, everything on Facebook, and so on. So I think it was the Patriot Act, to answer your question, that really set that into motion, but it was also economic reality. However, now we're in the era where almost nothing is secret. If you have an Amazon Echo device in your home, it's listening to you. If you have a Samsung Smart TV, it's recording video and uploading it somewhere. If you have any device with a microphone or a camera in your house, you're being surveilled. End of story.
That doesn't make me very happy.
That's, yeah.
Well, I found out the Samsung was recording us, and I had one in my bedroom, and I said, "Well, I think it's time to move this TV."
Right.
But you know, you look at this whole situation. This is what I've been told by a couple of insiders now covering the past several years. I've been told. One guy said it to me this way. He said, "Dave, you have a background as a mental health therapist. You know what the MMPI is. And what it is, it's a 16-dimensional score that you get with an aggregate score. And it rates your personality on 16 different levels." He said, "What the NSA is doing is something very similar to this, is they have aggregate scores for all these different categories, and then you get a total overall score. And he said, I can bet you, and he said, I don't know the number, but I can bet you there's a cutoff point. Naughty and nice. Naughty people go to FEMA camps. Nice people will leave alone until we no longer need them. And this is what I was told. What else could they be gathering this data for other than marketing?
Well, they want to be able to mine it for any kind of investigation, obviously. But I also agree with what you just said, that they are rating and scoring individuals constantly in real time. Just like you have a credit score, you also have an NSA risk score. You know, how risky are you to the powers that be? And I got to tell you, I had this thought the other day. The topics that you and I talk about and others in the independent media, the fact that we are still alive should tell you that we are just barely scratching the surface of the real secrets, the real deep stuff that you're not supposed to ever talk about. And just as a tiny example of that, Dr. Stephen Greer just put out a new documentary called Unacknowledged, which talks about, you know, extraterrestrial civilizations and so on. That's not my area of focus, so I don't know much about it, but that's the kind of stuff where people disappear forever. You know, certain people, you talk about that, you're dead. Like the things that you and I talk about, mostly I'm talking about natural medicine and self-reliance and things. The deep state can tolerate that stuff. They don't need to kill people who are just talking about, you know, hey, be more self-reliant, wake up and be aware. But if we got a hold of the kind of stuff that, for example, Andrew Breitbart got a hold of, they would kill us just like they killed him.
What do you think Breitbart had?
Oh, I think he had a video. My guess is he had a video of Obama worshiping as a Muslim and showing that he was a Muslim, or perhaps a video of him engaged in recreational drug abuse or something very personally embarrassing. Honestly, I don't think it would have mattered if the video had gone public, because again, logic and reason doesn't work on the left. But I think it scared somebody strongly enough in the Obama administration that they ordered him taken out anyway.
I was told it was bathhouse behavior, but we're along the same lines regardless.
Yeah, something really personally embarrassing.
Yeah, no question. And it's amazing they took him out for that, because some of what we say is far worse.
Yeah, but he bragged about it before releasing it, which, as you know, is a huge error. You don't go on the internet and say that you have something that's going to take out President Obama. You release it and then hide. That's what you do.
Well, that's true. But in this right? this day and age, they knew what he had as soon as he had it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, you know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think there's any communication devices we can use that the deep state can't tap into and know what we're doing?
Yeah, I do. The signal application from Whisper Systems is very, very high security, and the encryption of it. I mean, yeah, an app on your phone, like some malware on your phone, could intercept what you're typing before it goes to that app. But end-to-end, it's very well encrypted. And what it comes down to is not whether it's 100% safe or not. It comes down to how much economic cost would the government have to spend to break that encryption. You know, the government spent about $750,000 to break that iPhone encryption from the San Bernardino terrorist. So that's a pretty high barrier. I'd be fine to operate on an encrypted chat system where the government has to spend almost $1 million to break it. Now, if the government can break it for free or next to free, that's a bad system. But if the government has to spend $1 million, that's a pretty high barrier. They're not going to do that all the time. You know, that's almost the best situation we can hope for right now. And until the invention of quantum computing, you know, quantum computing applications, which are, of course, being researched all the time and are very, very close to having applications, they'll be able to break that, you know, even 256-bit key encryption, they'll be able to break it in seconds. So once quantum computing becomes widespread, it is the end of all encryption secrets, period, which, by the way, will also affect cryptocurrency in a huge way, but that's probably another discussion, a very technical discussion.
You think it'll take down Bitcoin, just to be general?
Well, I think that it will. I think it will allow whoever runs the quantum computers to steal cryptocurrencies from lots of different systems. But it's a big effort. It would require a lot of money, something that only a central bank could fund. But since they can create money from nothing, what's to stop them, right?
I completely understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that does make a lot of sense. And, you know, the cryptocurrencies are competing with the hoarding of gold that the elite are doing.
Yeah.
So what you're saying makes a great deal of sense. If they want to counter to this, simply use quantum computing to destroy the industry.
Yeah, I've given a lot of thought to this. I've been commenting recently on various cryptocurrencies, and some people disagree with my take on some of these. But, you know, we're all pro-liberty, and we're all anti-central bank. And one of the conclusions I've come to is that the central banks are definitely going to wage war against not just Bitcoin, but Litecoin and Ethereum and all the others, because the central banks really cannot exist in a world. And by the central banks, I also mean all the politicians that rely on unlimited money creation in order to stay in power by handing out entitlements to their voter base. So they need the central bank, and the central banks need the central banks, and the globalists need the central banks. They can't exist in a world without it. So there's no question in my mind that they are figuring out ways to wage extreme warfare against decentralized cryptocurrency systems. And one of the simple ways to do that, by the way, is to just buy lots and lots and lots of cryptocurrency with your fake fiat money that you're printing in your central bank and just start hoarding it and then wait for the right day to come along and stage a massive panic sell-off just by selling what you already have. So even though central banks can't necessarily get into the blockchain and alter the distributed ledger, what they can do is they can just do buys and sells. And since they have unlimited money, they can do that at a scale that no individual could even hope to achieve. So there are lots of ways to manipulate cryptocurrency if you're a central bank.
Oh boy, it's just you just started my mind spinning on this. These are avenues I've never really fully considered. But if cryptocurrencies really came into vogue in the mainstream, then debt repudiation of how they hold us in bondage, and I mean they being the central banks, debt repudiation could really come to the forefront as an option.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, J.P. Morgan's working on a cryptocurrency. And nations like China and Russia are working on their own cryptocurrencies. And what I'm actually projecting on this is a central bank-run cryptocurrency, perhaps put out by somebody like J.P. Morgan, that is perhaps partially backed by gold. It would be a compelling offer, even though it would be a farce in a sense, because it's still probably run by the central bank, and it's, you know, they probably have back doors into the whole thing. But I could see a lot of mainstream people who are not as informed jumping on something like that because they think it has all the advantages of Bitcoin when it's actually sort of a Trojan horse from the globalists who are trying to just exploit the fashionability, if you will, of cryptocurrencies, but they would still control it. You see what I mean?
Yeah, no, I completely see what you mean. And I'll tell you what I think could trigger it would be a revolution within the power elite themselves. And I'll go to something that was either 2011 or 2012, that Bank of America and Wells Fargo were guaranteed by the Federal Reserve around $75 trillion of indemnity insurance in case their credit swap derivatives investments failed.
Right.
And there's not even that much money total in the entire planet, but that's what they were guaranteed. But here's who was left out. J.P. Morgan was left out, key player. And there were other key players that were left out, including the boys at Goldman Sachs. Now, that could create disharmony. That kind of scenario or a scenario like it could create disharmony, and then you might see what you just suggested come into the forefront by someone who's dissatisfied saying, I'm going to get mine, and they go forward with this.
Well, there's no question that the bankers are factions in the globalists, and they're at war with each other, and they are vicious. They're just as vicious with each other as they are against the people.
Oh, I know. They kill each other off.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I mean, look at what happened to Bear Stearns and Arthur Andersen and all these you know, that no longer exist. They lost. Survival of the fittest.
I want to ask you this. You mentioned Russia and cryptocurrencies, and let me jump to the head of this.
Yeah.
Putin, good guy or bad guy?
Well, Putin, clearly a criminal mind, but a very intelligent mind, and far more rational than Obama. So, I don't think you can put him as good guy or bad guy. His interests are clearly pro-Russia, right? He's very much in competition with the West. And he's under a lot of pressure because of the economic failures of modern-day Russia and his dependence on energy exports for the bulk of the revenue that he has that's discretionary. They lost a lot with the fall of the USSR. You know, a lot of science, a lot of academia, a lot of innovation. And they are subsisting now as a shadow of what they used to be, but they still have control of plenty of nukes to make our lives miserable. So what I see Putin as doing really is a lot of posturing, a lot of threatening kind of talk, but still being rational. He's not a crazy person like Kim Jong-un. And I think my guess is that Trump and Putin can negotiate and reach understandings because both of them are equally aggressive. And that's not a horrible situation to be in. I mean, they both understand threats, they both understand power, and I think they can sit in a room and they can come to, you know, some kind of understanding to avoid nuclear war, whereas, you know, Obama would just hand over nukes to Iran, for example. You know, Obama would just hand out weapons all over the place and destabilize the Middle East. So I don't see Putin as being the most dangerous force by any means. I see actually Obama as still being very, very dangerous, vastly more dangerous than Putin right now.
That is a very interesting take. But, you know, and you're right about Putin's criminal mind, and I've written about it and gotten criticism for it. But, I mean, the guy is ex-KGB.
Yeah,
That morphed into the Russian mafia.
Right.
He's known to have killed journalists, brutally assassinated leaders from the other former Soviet Union republics.
Right.
So yeah, he is a bad guy in that sense. But let me tell you what I see about him in the modern times. He seems to be about the only world leader outside Donald Trump that has any common sense. And nuclear war is not really an option. He's preparing for the worst. But every time I turn around, I see him being patient with the West, who's trying to goad him into attacking.
Well, he's bewildered by the actions of the West, which has become increasingly insane. And there's no question in my mind that Putin is far more sane than your average leftist today. Right? I mean, like I said, Putin is aggressive. He's an animal, but he's rational. In fact, he's calculating. You know, he's like a mastermind villain. You know, the number of dead bodies trailed behind his rise to power probably is larger than the number of dead bodies behind the Clintons. And that says a lot.
I would agree. But
I agree with what you said. He is rational. He's not going to commit suicide as a nation. He's not going to put his nation in jeopardy by initiating a nuclear war. But if he is backed into a situation where he has few options, and remember, his country depends on energy exports, especially into Europe, and, you know, we've got the whole situation with Ukraine. The borderlands there between Russia and Western Europe are crucial, and that's where we're likely to see conflict and perhaps tactical nuclear conflict if things go bad.
That is interesting. If we go to war with Russia, do you think it's going to be Syria, or do you think there's a more likely powder keg?
I think Ukraine and areas geographically close to Ukraine. I also see that, you know, Russia has always been ahead of the U.S. in certain areas of weapons development. Just certain areas, not across the board, and they certainly don't have anywhere near the Navy that we have or the Air Force that we have. But, you know, they've been working on this hypersonic cruise missile. And they're very, very good at flight control systems and robust engines. For example, even in the 1980s, the Russian MiGs, you know, they could take off on runways that would tear up a U.S. fighter jet because we just didn't have the ruggedness built in. You know, the Russians always built really, really rugged engine systems that could handle, you know, particles and small pieces of rock. You know, they were not about anything being really streamlined, but just damn rugged, just, you know, working well. And that continues to this day. So they've got a really strong cruise missile weapons development division that could really threaten a lot of our naval ships. And that's a big, big concern.
It is, but is it a game changer or just an annoyance?
No, it potentially really is a game changer. I mean, if you've got cruise missiles that can take out aircraft carriers, then that's a game changer, because that aircraft carrier presence in any region is a, you know, it's a domineering force, especially in the Middle East or right now in North Korea. And all it would take is one kill shot of a Russian cruise missile taking out, you know, one aircraft carrier, and all the rest would back off. And that would change the dynamics in a huge way. And I don't know. I mean, maybe there are top secret defense systems that, of course, we don't know about that can blow those cruise missiles out of the sky. I hope we have those. But I'm not sure that we do. I'm not sure that we can hit something moving at, you know, Mach 9. Have you ever heard of defensive systems like that that can track incoming cruise missiles at Mach 9?
Actually, I have. Now, my knowledge on this is dated, but it comes from my own father's work with captured German scientists. And when he revealed this to me in the 80s before his death, he said, we have space-based weapons. And he said that, how did he know? Because he managed enough projects, he was able to figure it out. And he told me NASA's a joke. He said, he went back and actually described it this way. He said, after World War II, he said, in the mainstream, we had a decision to make. Did we go with Newtonian physics or with hyperdimensional physics? That was a term he used. And he said, the Germans were into hyperdimensional physics. He said, but the average university student after World War II was thought three-dimensional physics. Now, we've kind of come full cycle, Mike. In universities now, they offer courses in quantum physics taught by people like Michio Kaku from New York University. Mm-hmm. So we are now catching up in the mainstream with what they've done. But my father said the technology that was allowed through the use of hyperdimensional physics was far and above. And he said exotic weaponry is what we had. And I said, what do you mean by exotic? He said he believes, from what he saw on their reverse engineering drawing boards, that if you launched a nuclear missile out of the Soviet Union, we could neutralize the firing system from space.
Really?
Yes. That's wow. How specific. Now, the year in which he revealed that to me was 1985.
Gee.
This is from information he acquired in the 1960s. And then it was, the 90s. I met a man named Bill Pollack, actually was referred to me. And coincidentally, he worked with my father on his last stop, working on satellite technology in Westminster, Colorado, a place called Sunstrand Electric. And Bill was formerly the CIA when I met him. Now he's since passed. And he told me that's exactly what your father was working on at Sunstrand.
Well, that's very interesting. I had not heard of that, but it's worth pointing out that if the U.S. or Russia or any other nation had technology like that, it would ultimately be very destabilizing, because nullification of ICBM trigger systems, in effect, allows a first strike capability for the nation that has that nullification technology. And when nations, you know, let's say if Donald Trump were convinced that an attack were imminent from Russia, and he knew that he could nullify Russian ICBMs, that would motivate him to have a first strike against Russia. In other words, first strike capability is destabilizing, because it gives, you know, in game theory, it gives that nation more motivation to launch first. This was the whole argument against Star Wars and the missile defense system under Reagan, was that if we built a missile defense system, that Russia would have to strike us before we could complete it, because otherwise their missiles would be nullified and there would no longer be mutually assured destruction under game theory, which is a stabilizing impasse.
Well, I'm going to point to two other things. One, you don't get to develop this technology in isolation. The other side is going to work for a counter. And we know for a fact, and this was publicized in the mainstream media maybe 8 years ago, the Chinese developed killer satellite technology.
Yeah,
and,
we know that.
And so they actually made demonstrations that were made public that we can knock out some of your stuff out there in space. And
yes.
By the way, this whole system is run out of Buckley Air Force Base in Aurora, Colorado. I mean, this is something I've learned as well. But one other thing that I've learned, I had someone contact me who I would say is a very deep insider, very well connected. And after China, and this is what, 2-3 years ago, they devalued their currency, and we were really upset about it. So what we did was we leveled them with the rods from God is what they were called. And they were satellite-based weaponry that attacked Chinese industrial areas. And this went on for 3 days. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I wrote about that.
Yeah, and these were attacks from space.
Yeah.
They weren't dropping, you know, metal poles on Chinese industrial plants. This is the kind of technology that I was referencing that was a severe warning by the deep state to China, you will not do this.
Yeah.
And then the Chinese went the other direction and started to look at gold-based currency and aligned themselves more with the BRIC nations.
Well, what everybody needs to remember is that orbit is the high ground. So anybody who's got something in orbit that can be dropped or targeted is occupying the high ground. This is the concern about North Korea right now, that they may have EMP nuclear warheads on satellites that are positioned over North America and could conceivably drop a warhead into a position to detonate over North America. But I want to point out the ICBM carrying nuclear submarines are the real game changers in all of this. You know, the
right.
U.S. has lots. The Soviets, well, Russia has a few, but China has set up a new factory system to build both submarines and aircraft carriers in a factory-like fashion. And if you fast forward that machine for the next 20 or 25 years, China is going to have a massive naval presence that will rival the United States, even with Trump spending more money on military building. We're going to be in a standoff with China in terms of nuclear submarines. And even if you can track land-based ICBMs, because you know where they're going to be launched, right? You know where they are. You can see the silos from satellite. You can watch them being constructed. But these nuclear subs, you have no idea where they're going to pop up, which means you also have no idea how what the flight duration is or the flight path is going to be. If they can get close in to, let's say, the West Coast, they can launch a nuclear missile that detonates in, let's say, 3 minutes over a major U.S. city. You know, that's not outside the realm of possibility. So those are the real game changers. And, you know, I thank God for the nuclear submarine commanders who are working for our side, you know, because they're the ones that are the ultimate threats to the enemy.
Well, they were the one military group that Obama was never able to gain control from.
Yeah.
That I can speak with some knowledge on this. And they have their own military code of justice. They have their own uniforms. They're almost divorced from the rest of the military. And a guy who's a real good source on this is John Moore, broadcast over on RBN. And John knows a lot more about this than I do. But I've been told enough to know that the deep state does not control nuclear submarines. They're independent, and they are fiercely loyal to the Constitution. Now, leaders retire, and, you know, captains of ships die of old age, and eventually you're going to see a changing of the guard. But for right now, they're our best line of defense. I agree with you. You know what this really is, Mike? This is the doomsday weapons of the planet are these nuclear submarines.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I'll give you one more thing here along these lines. You mentioned the thing will get you killed the quickest is talking about aliens and UFOs and so forth. I'm going to share this thought with you. I asked my dad this question, and this is stuff I couldn't come out with until after the death of my mom, because she was living on his captain's pension. So I had to keep my mouth shut because the government could come in and said, ah, your father violated this, that, and the other. We're taking all your mom's assets. And so I didn't come out with this until 2012, but I networked with Jim Morris privately because he had some knowledge of this as well. Mm-hmm. But this is the big game changer in it all, in my mind. I asked my dad, do you believe in the UFO ET scenario? And he says, I have no idea. He said, but every one of the Germans I worked with believed it came from these people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people of the Christian persuasion will say, well, these are fallen angels, which happens to be my belief. But to a person, my dad said these Germans said they got this technology from ETs. And he asked him, did you ever meet them? No, but that's what our commanders told us.
Mm-hmm.
So the story still remains somewhat unconfirmed.
Well, you know, Steve Quayle, of course, speaks about ancient humans, human history, and technology transfers from other civilizations. There's no doubt in my mind that our cosmos is full of other living conscious beings. How they interact, you know, with us potentially is a big question. But I can tell you, I did a story on NASA sent the Viking lander to Mars in 1976. With a simple mass spec instrument to detect the byproducts of microbial life. And the experiment was positive. They detected microbial life. They proved that there were microbes living on Mars. And in fact, Carl Sagan even called the NASA engineer who created that experiment and congratulated him for being the first person to have discovered life on another planet. And then NASA covered it up. It's one of the greatest cover-ups in the history of science, and to this day, nobody knows the name of that scientist. I can't even recall it because he didn't go down in history as the guy to discover life on Mars, even though there is life on Mars and lots of other places.
Yeah, well, there's water on Mars, and they've proven that. And then we got Richard Hoagland's work on the face on Mars and the pyramids that are there, all unless you believe the lights and shadows story, and they all form at 90-degree angles. But,
right.
You want to buy that fiction, I got some swampland for you. But Mike, this has been a fascinating hour. We got to do this more often. We covered a lot of territory. We're out of time, but I wanted to give you we got about 20 seconds left. Tell people about the Health Ranger store.
Well, I always enjoy talking with you, Dave. Thanks for having me on. My online store, healthrangerstore.com, sells lab-verified clean foods. 600 different products to choose from, all tested in our lab. And my website's naturalnews.com.
Very good. Mike, always a pleasure. Hang on the line just for a second as we conclude. Everybody else, we'll be back next week with another great show. And I'll tell you, this has been a lineup of superstars tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. And we'll see you back here next week. Go out and have a great week. God bless everybody.